This is NASA Student Opportunities, a podcast connecting high school and college students with learning opportunities inside America's Space Agency. Episode 40, December 5th, 2007. I'm Dina Nunley. Students, start your pedals. Registration is now open for the 15th annual Great Moon Buggy Race. The annual event challenges high school and college teams to design, build, and race a human-powered moon buggy in the spirit of the original lunar rover that traversed the moon 35 years ago. The 15th annual Great Moon Buggy Race will take place April 4th through 5th, 2008 in Huntsville, Alabama at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. To compete, student teams design a vehicle that addresses a series of engineering problems similar to problems faced by the original moon buggy team. Students' moon buggies must carry two students, one female and one male, over a half-mile simulated lunar terrain course that includes craters, rocks, lava ridges, inclines, and lunar soil. To win, teams must assemble their buggy and complete the obstacle course in the shortest time. Each team is allowed two runs on the course. Prizes will be awarded to the top three teams in both the high school and college divisions. Additional awards include Most Unique Moon Buggy, Most Improved Moon Buggy, Rookie Award, System Safety Award, Spirit Award, Pit Crew Award, and the Crash and Burn Award. Teams can participate in an optional design competition as well. The Best Design Award will be given to the team whose moon buggy design represents the best technical approach for solving the engineering problem of navigating the lunar surface. Teams must register online by February 1st, 2008. For more information about the Great Moon Buggy Race, check out this week's show notes. Go to www.nasa.gov/podcast and click on the NASA Student Opportunities podcast. NASA's Reduced Gravity Student Flight Opportunities Project provides a unique academic experience for undergraduate students to get involved with scientific research, hands-on experimental design, test operations, and educational and public outreach activities. Over the course of 6 months, students propose, design, build, fly, and evaluate a reduced gravity experiment of their choice. Today, we're talking with a couple of students from Wichita State University who flew over the Gulf of Mexico aboard a C-9, experiencing almost 1 minute of hypergravity and microgravity. Aerospace engineering majors Mallory Jennings and Alex Kanalakos are going to walk us through each phase of the process, from concept development to post-flight evaluation. Their experiment featured a robot the size of a small loaf of bread, containing controls, motors, simulated sensors, and cameras that could assist astronauts with their day-to-day activities.
We came up with an intravehicular model that we wanted to not only serve as a maintenance tool and to help the astronauts while they're on the International Space Station with some of their routine maintenance, checking air quality. What we designed had a lot of versatility, but then we also wanted to have something that would let them have a little bit of entertainment while they're up in space, because they have very limited entertainment, and one of their favorite things to do, or they tell us, is to look down at Earth, but that makes them homesick. And so just anything else that we can send up there that has a multi-purpose, also entertainment, was our idea. And so we designed what we called ACOVAR to serve that purpose.
And the ACOVAR stands for Aerodynamically Controlled Intravehicular Activity Robot. And it's just really a kind of a cool basic aerospace design. And it's really great, would be very applicable for the astronauts, just because all the astronauts are scientists at heart. And it could act as an entertainment device. They'd still be able to put in their parts of engineering and aerospace with this device.
Could you give us an audio snapshot of how your design process worked?
We just basically went through the design process with conceptual design phase and moving on to a more detailed design and preliminary design phases. A lot of it came from just basic aerodynamic principles and using that to determine things as far as wing size and the size of our control surfaces, the size they needed to be, as well as the speed that we were going to need to be able to obtain. And then we could go further and into the electronics part of the design of finding a motor that would give us enough torque to produce enough thrust to get us that speed. So that was really the design process. It was really cool because a lot of the time the upperclassmen would be able to share things that the lowerclassmen had not learned about to get them even more interested just in aerospace engineering. But the design process was, I would say, a huge chunk of the entire time that we spent on the ACVAR.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It was really beneficial. I was only there for the fall semester of our planning, which was a lot of the design stuff. And so it was really, really neat to have 9 people in a room and, like, throwing out ideas. And sometimes some of the underclassmen would throw out an idea, and some of the upperclassmen would know that that might not work, but they would take the idea and help process that idea and figure out why it wouldn't work or if we can use parts of that idea. And it was really neat to be able to start using some of the equations and some of the stuff that we're learning in classes to apply to a real thing. So that was really exciting for me during the design process.
What was involved in building the project?
That part was definitely quite a few late nights because, you know, we're working on this. We're not getting credit for it during these 2 semesters that we were designing and then building it. And so it's kind of like an extracurricular activity. So we'd stay up late at night building and testing our project once it was built. We used mostly balsa wood for the structure of our ACVAR. And what was really cool is in a class we got to determine what the best type of material would be with just viewing things like carbon fiber and different composites, comparing it to balsa wood in a materials class that some of our team members were in. And then it was just really cool to put together these micro electronics into our frame and then monocoat the outer coating and then just try it out. I think the most troubleshooting that we did was definitely with the electronics because all 9 members of our team were aerospace engineers. And wow, we really wanted an electrical engineer, but that's what we had. And so we did a lot of troubleshooting with the electronics.
That must have been tough on a project like that to have gone in without an electrical engineering major helping you out.
It was difficult, but I think we broadened our insight on different engineering areas.
I'm guessing you learned a lot in areas that you hadn't necessarily had to study up until then.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just a huge challenge. But that was part of the fun, too, is you get to these showstoppers and you got to redesign or re-engineer something. And so that made it feel like it was a real project. I mean, there's no project that goes on that's going to be perfect the very first time you try it. And so I think that really, it also, you know, just allowed our whole team to come together in our like brainstorming sessions and say, okay, how do we fix this? How do we get around? And Mallory was at the time was at JSC during this, and so we'd have telecon sessions with her on the other end.
Yeah, and it's hard to be 10 hours away, and they're explaining things, and I'm like, I don't know, because I'm a very visual learner. So I'd be like, I don't know what y'all are talking about. Like, I can't help you. I'm sorry. And so it's hard to be that far away and still wanting to be part of the team, but they did a good job of including me.
I think another cool part about the building was this was really where the underclassmen could come into use. They really helped out a lot in the construction part because it was less time to teach how to build the prototype and build the actual robot. And so that was where the underclassmen really helped out. And it got them some hands-on opportunities, you know, some skills, which is important for any engineer to actually be able to build things, to understand the difficulties that technicians run into when they're building designs.
Once the experiment was ready, how did you prepare for the flight?
Once they got to Houston, because that's what I can talk about, because that's where I was already there, we did a lot of running through procedures and making sure, because we had to have procedures for when we were on the C9, what we were going to do, what order we're going to do things, because you feel like you, when you're up there, you have a lot of time, but you don't, and you need to get a lot of stuff done. And so we would run through procedures time and time again, and we did a lot of documentation and video recording of us walking through procedures and just so that we would have that kind of data. We also did a lot of, like, this might sound silly, but, like, bonding as a team because we could only send 2 people up at a time, and then the second flight we got to send 3 people up. And so it was really cool because, like, the 2 people or the 3 people that flew together really got close and really knew how to work, knew what each other was going to do on the flight. And so that's how, at least from my end, I prepared and got ready for the flight.
I think, you know, just going along with what Mallory said, there were a lot of, besides the basic engineering and, you know, design and building work, there was a lot of logistics that would go into it, anywhere from, you know, writing the proposal to filling out information for your medical card and filling out information for your release forms and the whole budget side of the project and, you know, getting funding. There was just a lot of logistics to go into preparation for flight. And I agree with Mallory. A lot of it also involved in teamwork bonding, just really knowing how to work with one another. And that was really great. I felt like our team just gelled so well together. We're all real proud to be Shockers. And so that was one thing that really kept us together. And we all had matching shirts. And it was just really cool to come together as a team and, you know, show our school spirit when we got down to Houston with the other teams.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Describe the flight and what you experienced.
Okay, well, I was on the second flight day, and I was the third person. I got to sit in and be an extra set of hands, which was helpful because our experiment was one of the few that is free-floating. Most of the experiments are bolted to the ground, so it kind of helped to have an extra set of hands up there. They run you through, like, things kind of medically, what you should do beforehand, drink a lot of water, get plenty of rest, eat breakfast like normal, those kind of things. And so did all of that stuff and was all psyched, and we got to wear really cool flight suits, which I was pretty excited about, and got up on the flight. And really, it's hard to explain what it feels like to be on the C9 while it's doing these parabolas. The other two people who had flown the day before, Alex included, tried to explain it, but they just really can't prepare you for how awesome it is. So we're climbing and we're climbing. We get our experiment all set up. We start the first one, and it was like an unbelievable experience. Like, your body is like going crazy because it doesn't know what's going on. And like, in that moment, it was really cool to see all of these months and months of work for Alex, years of work, coming to fruition and seeing everything come together and your experiment working, which is a big plus. And so it was really amazing for me. Unfortunately, a few parabolas into it, I started not feeling so hot, and so I did get sick and had to sit out for some of the parabolas. But it was still an amazing experience, and I was really glad that I had the opportunity to do it, obviously.
The first parabola is real gentle. You would think that it was like a roller coaster, but it's nothing like that at all. And it's very gentle, but your body, you know, is just in a orientation, in a free float, that it doesn't know what to do. But I think one of the coolest things that I remember is just looking around at all the other people on that very first parabola and seeing their smiles. Because it really is like, you know, being in space and having microgravity around you.
And you can't, like you can't stop smiling. Like, you want to, because you want to stay focused and do the job that you were put on the airplane to do, but you can't stop smiling because it's just such an amazing experience that so few people get experience, that you really just want to take it all in and really enjoy that moment.
Right.
Because we're up there, I don't know, 45 minutes, would you say, Alex?
Yeah, it's real short.
And that seems like a long time, but it goes by so quickly, and you're like, I just want to go back. I want to do it again. So you got to enjoy it while you got it.
Right. I think another thing that was really good was the challenge of our experiment. Like Mallory said, it was a free float. So you had to be on the ball. You had to stay with your procedures, but you also had to be very flexible and understand that, you know, this device, our robot that we developed, is not probably going to react exactly how we designed it to. But to our surprise, you know, it did work, and it accomplished several of our objectives. And one of the things that was really good from it is that, you know, it is something that we can then take back what we learned and even develop the project further. There's a lot of things that can be modified to make it even perform even better.
So is there some type of a future for your experiment? Is somebody going to pursue that?
That's a question for Mallory.
yes, school. We've actually got a lot of the upperclassmen that are juniors, I guess now, are moving on to other projects and other things within the college. But we've got a lot of the underclassmen returning. We've got some new people on our team now, and we've got already some ideas and brainstorming and good thoughts towards modifying and continuing with this experiment.
Following the flight, what did you do to evaluate the results of your experiment?
Because it was so fresh in our mind, we did a lot of talking and kind of post-flight, just like debriefing with each other and what worked and what didn't. And then once we came back to Wichita and had relaxed a little bit and kind of recollected ourselves, we kind of got back together and looked at some of our video and kind of evaluated that. We were able to kind of qualitatively evaluate and see what went wrong and how we can improve it for the future. But from what we saw, our experiment went really well, and we were really excited with the results.
Looking back over the Microgravity University project, what would you say was the highlight for you?
I would definitely have to say the flight. After you have so many parabolas, 20, 25, 30 parabolas, performing your experiment and completing test objectives, then you should definitely schedule in a few parabolas where you really just get to enjoy and take a mental memory note of the flight and the experience you're having. And it was really cool just to maybe do somersaults in the plane and the test. Directors that were in there, the people inside the aircraft that were observing and providing safety for us, they'd help you do somersaults or push-ups. And I also looked outside the window, which they tell you, if you have a queasy stomach, you shouldn't do. But I have a pretty good stomach, and I just looked outside the window, and it was pretty cool to see the water at like a 60-degree vertical angle, and you feel like you're flying horizontal, but you look out, and the plane's going up in a 60-degree incline ascent, and so I just can still remember and picture that moment.
My favorite part of this whole thing would definitely also be the flight. I really enjoyed being able to see our experiment come all the way to the end and see the final product and see it working. And not only that, but just getting to enjoy microgravity when so few people get to do that, and having the opportunity at the age of 20 when I'm still in college to get to do that was really awesome for me.
I think another comment just to go on to that is that through this, you really get close with people. I mean, I definitely have. It was just really cool to work with young engineers at your university and get to know them really well and not let it always be about engineering and really get to have some great friends when you come out of it.
One last question. As students listen to your story and contemplate submitting a proposal, do you have any helpful advice for them?
Start early. that's a big thing. And just be in contact with Johnson Space Center. Call them up, and if you have a question, will this work? Or on this part of the proposal, do you think that they'll be interested in this? And, don't be afraid of asking for advice, because I think that's really important. Also, that they'll know that you're working on it and you're working hard. So I think contact with NASA is really important, and get a group of people that you're going to work well with. I think that was one of the reasons we had so much success, is that we had just really excited people that love space and wanted to see the success of this project.
I would second that. It's not only about the science and the engineering, but really enjoy the project. Have fun with it. Do something that you're truly interested in, not just something that you think that they're going to accept, because they're more likely to accept it if you have a passion for it and if you can put that through in your proposal than if it's just something cookie cutter that you think that they want to hear.
In addition to the Reduced Gravity Student Flight Opportunities Project, Mallory and Alex have both participated in NASA's co-op program at Johnson Space Center. For Alex, it led to a full-time NASA job in the Extravehicular Activity Task Group following college graduation in May 2007. Mallory plans to graduate by 2011. If you're interested in more information about these NASA learning opportunities, go to www.nasa.gov/podcast. Click on the NASA Student Opportunities podcast and follow the links in this week's show notes. We want to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about NASA learning opportunities, send an email to educationpodcast@nasa.gov. Thanks for listening. NASA Student Opportunities is a podcast production of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration.